Good afternoon, and welcome to a Juno Afternoon. This is your Monday host, Katie Bosler. Good to be here, everybody, for Monday, the 17th of September, 2012. In the next hour, City Manager Kim Kiefer will update us on what's happening with the City and Borough of Juno. We'll meet the man behind the wheel of Juno Limousine Services, Jeff Wright. Andy Klein will fill us in on next month's Battle of the Bands. Vini Latta will be here with details on Human Rights Week. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more on a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News 104.3 FM. Up next, National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A U.S. Senate committee hears from the nominee to serve as Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. Kevin Washburn testified Friday during a Senate committee on Indian Affairs hearing. KCNP's Brian Brazier has more.
Kevin Washburn's confirmation hearing began with recommendations from fellow Chickasaw citizen, Oklahoma Congressman Tom Cole, and Chickasaw Governor Bill Anitubby.
His combination of knowledge and practical experience make him uniquely qualified to provide the strong leadership necessary to ensure the Bureau of Indian Affairs can be and continue to be a positive force in helping enhance the quality of life of Indian people across this country. As governor of the Chickasaw Nation, I wholeheartedly support his nomination and urge a quick confirmation.
Washburn said during his testimony that he appreciates and will defend each tribe's relationship with the federal government.
I know that some direct service tribes strongly believe that they want the federal government to continue to serve in the roles that the federal government has promised to serve. And the United States has many solemn obligations to those tribes, and I will strongly support the efforts of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Indian Education to lead up to those solemn obligations. But I will also strongly support self-governance efforts and the efforts of tribes to take over these operations themselves.
If confirmed, Washburn will be the 12th person to lead the BIA, the oldest bureau in the Department of the Interior. For National Native News, I'm Brian Brazier.
The prospect of offshore oil and gas drilling in the Arctic has prompted vocal opposition from many environmental groups. And as KDLG's Mike Mason reports, last week a tribal group voiced concerns publicly.
An organization that advocates on behalf of tribes in Alaska is calling for a stop to Shell's offshore oil drilling plans in the Chukchi Sea. The Alaska Intertribal Council that was started in the early 90s by over 150 tribes has come out publicly in opposition to offshore oil and gas drilling in not just the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, but also in Bristol Bay and Cook Inlet. Delise Calcote is the executive director of the Alaska Intertribal Council.
We don't want the drilling in our garden. Oil industry either spills or explodes, creates disasters. Why do that in the water?
The Alaska Intertribal Council issued a press release noting that the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas are critical habitat for many subsistence resources, including bowhead whales and other marine mammal species, central to the health, well-being, and cultural survival of Native people. Calcote says it's frustrating that the views of many of Alaska's Native people on the subject of offshore oil drilling are being ignored by state and federal leaders who are in favor of such drilling.
Hard to go to them to ask them for help to protect our rights that we have and that are recognized both nationally, internationally, and locally. And, you know, it seems like they're all for the drilling and exploration industry and not after protecting our communities, our food sources.
Shell Oil is currently preparing to drill some exploratory wells in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, but is under a deadline of September 24th to conclude its drilling program. Royal Dutch Shell has spent well over $4 billion to support its plans for offshore oil production in the Arctic. The company stresses that any actual oil production is still a decade away. The U.S. Geological Survey estimates that the Arctic could hold around 90 billion barrels of recoverable oil and 1.7 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
During this week in 2011, the Rosebud Sioux Tribe held a groundbreaking ceremony for its Tribal Veteran Center near Mission, South Dakota. The tribe received a first-of-its-kind grant by the VA for the project. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
On KTOO FM 104.3, this is Katie Bosler, hosting a Juneau Afternoon now on Mondays. And with me in the studio is Kim Kiefer, our city manager. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Katie.
Good to have you here.
Nice
as
to be
always.
Here. Thanks.
And you're here for your somewhat regular visit to go over with us what's happening on the agenda tonight for the assembly meeting. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am. It just happens to be the third Monday of the month, also coincides this month with an assembly meeting. So tonight we have a few items up for public hearing, and what that means is the public has an opportunity to testify on these items when they come up in front of the assembly. Most of them are housekeeping issues tonight. So the first one is an ordinance amending the land use code to remove the geographical restrictions on reconstruction of a dwelling that has been damaged. So right now...
Okay. Well, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. I know Lori Seekar, city clerk, gets to read all of the titles, and many times they're quite the mouthful. And what that really boils down to is this is an old part of the code that says if a fire or some other structural thing damages a facility or a house, that if it's in the city proper, either city of Juneau proper or city of Douglas proper, you can rebuild it. But the code doesn't allow you to rebuild it anyplace else. So this change allows that rebuilding to be able to happen anywhere in the city and borough of Juneau, rather than just in the city of Juneau and the city of Douglas.
So, and, well, anywhere that's permitted for building, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. You can't, like, build your house in the middle of Sandy Beach.
No,
or
no,
right.
No. You gotta, and you're rebuilding, so you can't,
okay.
It's not a new build. So if something happens, it's a rebuild on that same lot. Because I think what they were looking at before was, as many people know, many downtowns in Alaska have burned, and allowing people to come back in and build right on that same footprint. And at the time, they were looking just at that historic area, and we want to make sure that anybody that has that investment can rebuild wherever they are in the community. So that's one of the housekeeping items. We have another one that's a more modern one, and that's a revision to the traffic code. And it basically just is a definition for the term registration for the on-street parking. So how we've been interpreting the term registration is different from how the court system is, so we want to make sure we've got a clean definition of registration. So what I mean registration is when you go and pay your money for after you get your 2 hours free parking and you want to add time to it, that's registering your car in the parking district. And so we just need to make sure we all have the same language for that. So it's just a tweak in that language. Doesn't make any difference on what you do on your front end of it. It's just on the back end of it for us.
Okay, and speaking of that, that's a relatively new system where we have these computerized machines, and you can, you know, you plug in your license plate number, you can get that free 2 hours parking. How's it going? I mean, are people figuring it out?
I think so. It's still not intuitive, you know, and I don't know. Somebody was talking to me the other day about what's intuitive is different for every person that's
I'll
in front of
what,
a computer.
I'll tell you what was intuitive for me. This was now, I guess, a good year and a half ago, or however long it's been. Sunny day. Parked, just happened to serendipitously park next to the hot dog vendor who saw my pain and showed me how to do it. I got this private lesson, and then now I get it. And like when I see someone standing in the rain tearing their hair out, I go, here you go. You
know? Here, I'll help you. Yeah. You know, I walk anytime I see somebody, it's like, do you know how to do it? Yes, I got it. Or, no, I don't have a clue.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
still a work in progress for some people,
yeah.
and it just depends on how often you're downtown.
Yes.
But what it has done, it's definitely opened up the parking downtown, so there's a lot more parking available for people. It's
very
still
much
pretty
so.
tight around lunch hour, which you would expect because a lot of people like to come down and have lunch with people. But it definitely has made a difference on getting movement in the downtown core area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Another change that we're making, it's sort of in that new world as well. Everybody probably is aware that Arrow has put out some new garbage cans. And our code right now says that you have to put the owner's name on the garbage can. Well, most of those cans that Arrow has are rental cans. So we need to have people put on the person that's renting it and putting that address. And Arrow doesn't want people to write on the can itself because they're rental and they go from place to place. So what they want to do is
no taking a Sharpie and scrawling
right,
your name
exactly.
on it.
Right, exactly. No, what they want
is... Right.
Yeah, you don't own it. It's a rental, so you really don't want to mm-hmm. mess up a rental. But what you want to do is put your address like on a luggage tag and put it onto the garbage can. And this change of code allows it the renter's address rather than the owner's address.
Okay.
So it's just something
you
with
this
change.
So you can own your
change.
House, but you rent your garbage can.
Well, you can actually own your garbage can, too, if you want to, but most people choose to rent them.
Oh.
Yeah, there is, and then there's a different fee for
okay.
that service. But the majority of people do rent their garbage
okay.
cans.
Okay, you don't know offhand how much it costs?
I don't
okay.
know offhand.
But Arrow has people.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The other couple items that we have in front of the Assembly are funding. Many times what comes to the Assembly is ordinances to appropriate funding. So we get grant funding throughout the year that hasn't been put into the budget. When that comes through, then the Assembly has to appropriate that to different departments. So we have $110,000 that we received from the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to be able to use for our emergency programs. And so a variety of things they have to do. And this grant is a dollar-for-dollar match. So that means that for the $110,000 that we have to match that with a like amount. And most of the time that's done with staff, a staff match for the time that they put into it. Another one that we are appropriating tonight is a $21,665 grant for the police equipment. And that will go to purchasing equipment. What will include firearms for the SWAT team, rain jackets for patrol officers, and then an upgrade for our bomb robot. And on this grant, it actually has no requirement, so we just get the money to be able to use within a specific limitation of what the grant allows. And in this case, it's for police equipment. And then the final one is just to appropriate funding $372,700, and that's to fund a negotiated wage increase and longevity steps that the Assembly approved in August for MEBA and the non-represented employees.
And MEBA, for those, that's again,
Boatman's Association.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Boatman's.
Okay.
I think it's Boatman's.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I know,
but
it's MEBA always.
But this is the union for boat operators.
This is, the city has MEBA members with the city. The city has union representation from police, for fire, and MEBA are three unions.
Okay.
For the city, of those people that are actually represented by a union. And
okay.
so they negotiated this contract. It was a 1% increase. The Assembly approved that, and now we just are appropriating those funds because it wasn't done prior to July 1 when the budget was adopted.
Okay. And if people want to comment on any of these items, how do they do so? What's the procedure?
Well, the Assembly meeting starts at 7 o'clock, and in the back of the Assembly chambers is a sign-up sheet, and you say, you put your name down, and then you write down what you want to comment on, which ordinance it is. And if you don't do that, many times the mayor who runs the meeting will ask, do you want to comment on this or a different one? There's also a time at the beginning of the meeting for a comment on non-agenda items. So if it has nothing to do with any of the ordinances that are up for public hearing, you can come and let the Assembly know what your thoughts are about specific situations going on or anything to do with city government.
And this is all at the...
It's all at the Assembly chamber at 7 o'clock.
At the beginning of the meeting.
It's correct.
Right.
It's at the beginning of the meeting.
Okay. Or anything to add?
Yeah. No.
Okay, just so kind of a lighter time of year, just sort of basic housekeeping type stuff, it sounds like.
It is, and yeah. It tends to be that way as you get closer to an election. Not
Feels
a lot
good
of meaty
here.
Things. It's like, let's just keep moving things forward, and then we'll have a new Assembly sworn in probably on October 15th, and then they will most likely within a month or so set their goals for this upcoming year, where they want, what they want to do.
All right. Well, Kim Kiefer, City Manager, thank you so much for coming in and keeping us up to date on what's happening with the city and the assembly.
Thank you, Katie.
All right, have a good week.
Thanks, you too.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 17th of September, 2012. It was on this date in 1683, a Dutchman named Antoni van Leeuwenhoek wrote a letter to the Royal Society in Amsterdam, sharing his discovery of what he called animalcules, or what we know as bacteria. He had no higher education, but he was very curious about the world around him. He'd been experimenting with grinding lenses and making his own simple microscopes, and he studied the plaque that he found between his teeth, and he saw, he said, very little living animalcules, very prettily a-moving. The biggest sort had a very strong and swift motion and shot through the water or spit like a pike does through the water. The second sort spun round like a top and were far more in number. He was one of the first to observe bacteria. The Royal Society was skeptical. They wondered if he was crazy, but today Leeuwenhoek is considered the father of microbiology. He looked at blood cells, sperm, nematodes, muscle fibers, and algae. He wrote right up until his death at the age of 90, and his last letters were very detailed observations of his own final illness. It's the birthday of the man who wrote one of the best-known and oft-parodied poems, his poem, "I Have Eaten the Plums That Were in the Icebox and Which You Were Probably Saving for Breakfast. Forgive me, they were delicious, so sweet and so cold." William Carlos Williams, born Rutherford, New Jersey, 1883, doctor and poet. William Carlos Williams, who wrote, "It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there." He said, "We are blind and live our blind lives out in blindness. Poets are damned, but they are not blind. They see with the eyes of angels." It's the birthday of the Irish writer Frank O'Connor, born Michael O'Donovan in Cork in 1903. He worked as a librarian, self-educated, thought about becoming a painter, but paints cost too much money, so he became a writer, because, he said, you could be a writer with a pencil and a penny notebook. His stories collected in the book The Stories of Frank O'Connor, and he wrote two memoirs, An Only Child and My Father's Son. And it's the birthday of Ken Kesey, born in La Junta, Colorado, 1935, champion wrestler in high school, voted most likely to succeed, got a fellowship in creative writing at Stanford. He became an aide in the VA hospital, where he heard about an experiment in search of volunteers, and he volunteered. It was run by the CIA. They were investigating various mind control techniques, injecting people with mescaline or LSD. So he took the drugs in the experiment, and they gave him the idea for his first novel, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a struggle between a powerful nurse and a con man named Randall Patrick McMurphy. Here's a poem by William Carlos Williams on his birthday, his poem, The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. The Red Wheelbarrow, poem by William Carlos Williams from his collected poems published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping businesses improve what potential customers find online in search engines and review sites. Learn more at Reputation.com. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well. do good work, and keep in touch.
Oh, thank you, Garrison. I always like the way he says those last few words of wisdom. This is Katie Bosler, and hosting a June afternoon now on Mondays. And with me in the studio is quite a week of some semi-regular feature here on a June afternoon, started by Mr. Jeff Brown. And that is, we have a local business person in and kind of just learn about their business. And this one, I think, is a really interesting and fun one, and that is Juno Limousine Services. And owner Jeff Wright is right here with me.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Juno.
Welcome, Jeff. It's good to have you here. Juno Limousine Services, you know, we've seen these incredibly long vehicles. I guess you have white ones and black ones, right, kind of around town?
Yeah, we've got six different vehicles. We have a sedan, a black limo, white limo, a small H3, a 14-passenger van, and then also a 32-passenger limo bus.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be a limousine per se to be part of Limousine Service. It could just be a passenger van.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We get lots of requests during the summer just from people that don't want to stand out or something. They might want just a regular car or van.
I see. Okay. And tell us a little bit about the history of the business. It sounds like it's been around for a good almost 30 years.
Yep. It's been around since Ray Thibodeau started the business back in 1983, and he owned it for about 8 years. And then after that, a gentleman named Tony Woodrow purchased the business, mm-hmm. and he ran it for about 16 years. And he increased it from one vehicle that Ray Thibodeau had to three vehicles. And then my wife and I purchased the business. My wife Karen and I purchased the business back in 2006. And we've added three vehicles since we purchased it. That's the limo bus, the 14-passenger van, and the H3.
So it sounds pretty busy.
Yeah, it's been getting busier, yeah.
Yeah, so you have some drivers besides yourself.
We've got about five or six drivers during the summer, and one full-time driver, Judy Hammond. She's been with us for quite a few years, and she does a fantastic job. Everyone loves her.
So are you kind of on call 24/7?
Yeah, pretty much any time anybody needs a limo, just give us a call, and you can schedule one at any time.
Okay, and what's the number?
463-5466 or 463 limo.
Okay, well that's easy. 463 limo. Okay, go figure, huh? So, you know, do you have like a most memorable ride?
I get to drive around Emma Thompson and Kate Winslet at the same time.
Oh
and
my
their
gosh!
Family. Yep.
Wow, now were they? What were they doing in town?
They just came on vacation to kind of get away from everything and. We get a lot of famous people that come through town just to get away from their usual routine. And
well, see, now, I've always worried about it. I have this theory, right? I mean, I don't know. I guess I haven't been lucky enough to see, like, Brad Pitt at Douglas Cafe, which I guess happened a few years ago, apparently. But my theory is that, you know, People Magazine, the paparazzi, they don't know where they are, right? They get up here, and do they come up on yachts or jets?
A lot of times they fly up on their private jets, and then no one knows they're here until they're gone. And then the community finds out later. It's like, what? They were here?
Yeah, but you know they're there.
Sometimes I know they're there, but other times they sneak around us, too. They might go out to a private fishing lodge, and we never see them. So.
Yeah, so what's that like when, you know, you get this call and... Well, do you know that this is a celebrity before you pick them up, or do you just...
Actually, most of the time, I don't know who I'm picking up. If it's a celebrity, they'll have an alias, or like last summer, I was sitting at the airport, and I didn't know until 5 minutes before the plane landed that I was going to drive the Eagles rock band around.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
Well, take it to the limit.
Exactly. They came here, played on a cruise ship for one night, and they left the next day.
What the heck?
And that was the first time they've been to Alaska.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. Wow. So didn't you just... And did you know you were picking them up?
I had no idea I was picking them up.
Oh, my God. Didn't you just wish you, like, had take it to the limit and right in your stereo that was, like, just hit play?
Exactly. Yeah.
You'd be, like, living the dream, man. Wow. Gosh, yeah. That was my first rock concert a long time ago.
Yeah.
Day on the Green, Oakland, California.
Yeah.
any celebrities this summer?
Actually, I didn't have any celebrities this summer except I had a lot of, when the food chefs came to town, we had a lot of famous food chefs. Like, I got to drive around Emeril Lagasse, also Wolfgang Puck.
So did you kind of, get any recipe ideas for them? Maybe a marinade for salmon?
Not really. I did give Emeril Lagasse some of my raspberry jelly to try, and I told him to give me a full report, but I haven't heard back from him yet.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure you're going to get the call any day. Jeff, you don't need to be in the limousine business anymore. This is Emeril. That'll just be fun, you know. And so it sounds like it's not the situation where, you know, you've got the soundproof separator between the driver and the people. You can converse while you're driving.
Yeah, we can converse with the driver, but then also there is a divider in there that they can put up.
So it's optional.
To. Yeah,
okay.
Optional.
All right, sure.
Then we've got lights in the back, and then also if they bring their own music, you can plug in iPods and things like that.
Yeah,
too,
tell us about the features. I mean, I haven't been. I don't even remember the last time I was in a limo. But but what's new in features in limos? What do you guys have?
They've kind of, you know, we've got stereos. Like I say, you can plug in your iPods, mm-hmm. and also you know, you can bring your favorite beverage along, and as long as everyone's over 21, of course.
So you have like deluxe drink holders.
Yeah, and we got champagne glasses and stuff like that.
Do you have a refrigerator?
Oh, we got ice buckets.
Refrigerator. Oh, of course. Well, that's got to go in style, right? You got to have the ice bucket.
Yeah, but we get, you know, people from all walks of life. They give us a call to do birthday parties for kids, and then also adult birthday parties, bachelor parties, bachelorette parties.
And I imagine prom season's pretty busy.
Yep, prom gets busy. So for like the school dances, we get pretty busy then. So it's good to book ahead of time.
Yeah. If somebody does want to do like a birthday party, wedding, whatever is, do you have a recommendation about how far in advance people should reserve?
The sooner the better. You know, just to make sure we got the vehicle available for them. But we do, you know, we do some if the time's available and it's last minute, that's fine too. So it never hurts to give us a call, see if we're available.
Now, have you ever been to a limo driver's convention?
Actually, not a limo driver's convention, but I went to an LCT show, which is down in Las Vegas. They do them every year, and they've changed it. Unfortunately, now it's like on Valentine's Day, which is one of our busiest days of the year, so I haven't been to one for a while. But they used to do them in January, and I went down to one of those, and that was a lot of fun. Got to see some of the new equipment and some of the manufacturers and stuff of limousines.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. But since it's your own business, it's not like you can just have the boss is going to pay for it, right?
Right.
You are the boss. Okay. You know, and do you ever, you know, I don't know, like serve as sort of a counselor to people? You know, like they kind of just start telling you their problems, and because you could listen.
Yep, I've had a few folks like that where they've been going through some tough times and they just need somebody to talk to, and they call us up and they drive them around.
It's like limo/listening services.
Yep.
I was wondering about that. Gosh, and what's the most outrageous request you've ever had from a customer?
I've had a bachelorette scavenger hunt, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
Go cruise around to different places, and they had to go do different things.
So they gave you the map and everything, I guess.
Actually, they just told me where to go, and then they had all the plans, like what they were going to say to the folks when we got there and, you know, ask them questions, and then they were supposed to get an answer from somebody there, you know. So.
Well, that's a good idea for a party game.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, Jeff Wright, owner of Juno Limousine Services, is there anything you want to add?
If you ever have a special occasion or you got friends coming to town, we do a lot of tours around town. But give us a call anytime.
And I imagine your rates vary depending on if you have to get the van or the limo or whatever.
Yeah, the rates kind of vary. So you can check us out online at junolimo.com. They vary, and it's by the hour. It's a one-hour minimum. So you can call up if you just want to book an hour. That's fine.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in.
Yep, thank you.
And all the best with your business.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Beep, beep, and beep, beep. Yeah. Yeah. Andy Klein is here.
Hey, it's Weekly Weblock. And
oh!
What are we? Wait a minute.
Wow, that was a blast from the past.
That was a time warp.
I have a little PTSD over that, Andy. I got a little, like, nervous.
The DTs. It's funny, isn't it, to think about, we used to do this thing called a Weekly Web Walk back when the web was cool.
When it was new. That's how old we are.
Funny to think about how we used to say, believe it or not, you'll be able to find information on this on the interweb.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
On the World Wide Webs.
Because Andy, in his past life, was the state of Alaska's first webmaster.
I was, yes. Well, not first, but I was the webmaster for the state for a long time. Yeah.
And we did this feature on Morning Edition back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, called Weblock.
The Weekly Weblock. WWW.
And there was a lot to walk around.
There was.
But Andy's here
and avoid. Yes. Walk around.
Right. And
step on that.
Speaking of avoiding, I wanted to play Take It to the Limit, but Andy wouldn't have any of that.
Well, I know that's a good story about the Eagles getting into the limo, but that does not mean that you have to play the Eagles. Please.
Andy said, please, I'll just go on the radio
now. Just put me on. All right, let's fill. And I'm here to talk about Battle of the Bands. This is exciting. Well, there's a couple of things I wanted to touch on. Well, number one is the virus is once again upon us and is spreading. And they will soon walk among us as they rise from the graves. Yes, the zombie walk is coming.
Oh, man.
The zombie walk. First Friday of October, folks.
That's October 5th, right?
That's October 5th, so the zombie walk. Get ready for that. That's all I need to say for now.
But for the uninitiated, what happens?
Zombies gather in Everton Green Cemetery and then walk and basically invade First Friday. And that's it. There's not a lot. I mean, they're zombies.
Yeah. Right.
So they're not, they don't really go much beyond that. And they eat the flesh of the living. Did I mention that?
There's that.
Then they eat the flesh of the living. Yeah, that's that whole part.
Well, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, but Zombie Walk's going to be coming. So people are asking a lot, like, is Zombie Walk happening again? So Zombie Walk's happening first Friday of October.
Got it.
Get ready for that. And then Battle of the Bands is happening. Now, the actual Battle of the Bands is going to happen October 26th. That's the day of it. That's a Friday. And that's, of course, the Friday before Halloween. But what I'm doing now is the call for bands is beginning now. So for the next month, bands have until I haven't put a hard and fast deadline on it, but basically until mid-October. You've got until mid-October, and we'll put more kind of hard and fast deadlines on this as we develop. But okay. if you've got a band out there and you want to get exposure and you want to play live in front of hundreds of people, and you want to get into a competition to be declared the winner of the Battle of the Bands of Juneau,
yeah,
just like Dirty Scoundrels were last year, right now is your chance to do it. So all you have to do is submit an MP3 or something like that to me, or point me to where I can see a web thing. You know, if you've got something on YouTube or if you've got something in SoundCloud, just send me the link to andy@ktoo.org. Just send that to me. And say, hey, check out, here's our band page on SoundCloud. Listen to it. We are definitely a band. We're in.
You have to be a band to apply to be Battle of the Bands.
See, this was the thing, was when we were first organizing Battle of the Bands last year, it turned out great. We got 8 submissions. All 8 bands showed up and played. They were all great. I mean, it was really a fun event. It came off without a hitch, sort of. It was one of those, like...
And this was the first?
That was the first one, yeah.
Okay.
So this is the second annual Battle of the Bands here. But I was afraid that people would sort of like, you know bands, right? People think they're in bands. And they're like, yeah, man, you know, sign us up. And then, like, they just don't show because, you know, Bill's out of town or whatever, right? You know,
or they forgot.
We can't get a bassist. You know? So, you know, I wanted to make sure that the bands were really actually bands.
Yeah.
Really formed, really
okay, gotcha,
had it together. So that's why there needs to be a submission of music that you guys have done as a band. It could be a cover song or it can be original for the submission, but that's how it, yeah.
And is it strictly a Battle of the Bands, just a fun event, a benefit?
Well, it's a benefit. It's a twofold benefit. It's a benefit for Excellent Radio, public radio station, and also for Cancer Connection.
Right.
So this is the Battle of the Bands, Battle Against Cancer is the full name of the Battle of the Bands thing. And yeah, Cancer Connection. Last year we were able to write a check for $3,000 to the Cancer Connection out of Battle of the Bands.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we were really excited about that, and they were excited about it too. Cancer Connection is a really cool organization because all of the money sort of stays local. It all goes to people who are dealing with cancer or families of people who are dealing with cancer here locally, and so it goes towards, you know, like having to pay for doesn't pay hospital bills directly, I think, but I think it helps pay for like hotel rooms or all the kind of ancillary costs that happen around when you've got long-term cancer or that kind of stuff and just having to deal with all that stuff. So, you know, for the people who are struggling with that thing or just trying to fight through it.
That's a great local support organization.
Really cool.
And so Battle of the Bands, you're taking applications, if you will, now to be a band in the Battle of the Bands, but there's no set date yet, right, for the battle itself?
No, October 26th.
October 26th.
The battle will occur on the Field of Honor, which is the Jack. The Jack is the Field of Honor. But anyway, yeah.
I have this image of, you know, of swords.
Yes, absolutely. So do I. Battle axes. Don't you? Broadswords. Yes. On a mighty steed.
Yeah,
you ride in.
Yeah.
Play your guitar.
All right. But
That didn't happen last year exactly that way. But people, there was slaying that occurred last year at the Battle of the Bands. The other thing that I like...
Figuratively.
Dirty Scoundrels have an amazing guitarist who slayed the crowd.
Gotcha.
With his guitar prowess.
Okay.
It was amazing.
Right. But basically the bands play one at a time, and then people vote on them or clap for them.
Yes, and then there is hand-to-hand combat. I mean, it also measures toughness. You know, we want that measured physical toughness.
So is there like dueling guitar players kind of thing?
Not dueling guitar players, but you're allowed to go on and physically assault the other band while they're playing.
Right, Andy.
No. I'm kind of thinking of a new sport here. This would be cool. Cage matches. I love it. I like where you're going with this, Katie. This is good stuff. No. What happens is we split the stage in two, and we cover up one side of the stage with a curtain, and then a band plays on the other side. Meanwhile, on the other side that's being hidden, that other band's setting up. So we've been able to go back and forth really quick between the two bands. It really worked great last year. It was a lot of fun.
Sounds very cool.
Yes.
Andy Klein, thank
I hear
you.
Jeff Beck in the background playing me out here. Very good. He's a slayer.
You're not kidding.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Mr. Beck.
Oh, yeah.
And
blow by blow.
This is She's a woman.
She is a woman.
You know
Constipated Duck is great off of that album, too. Love it.
I'll have to see that one up next.
Yes, please do. Very good.
Okay, Battle of the Bands. Excellent radio. Andy Klein is taking applications. Just email to andy@kto.org.
That's it.
Your YouTube link or your SoundCloud link, whatever.
Or an MP3 if you just have that, yep.
Okay, and any deadline for that?
Mid-October is going to be the deadline. So if you get it in the next few weeks, that's great. I'll be getting out posters and publicizing a little bit more. We're right at the beginning of it right now. So if you got it to me this week, you'd be in, no problem.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in.
Boom.
Good talking to you, Andy.
Good to talk to you too, Katie.
And up next, in a bit here, will be Vini Lata and Steve Wolf with details on Human Rights Week. This is Katie Bosler, and you are listening to a Juno Afternoon. And joining with the joining me in the studio. Sorry, I just got off a plane this morning, so I'm a little punchy. Are Steve Wolf and Nate Valier. They are from the Human Rights Commission, and they're going to fill us in on what's happening this week. A couple of events for Human Rights Week.
Hi, Katie.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good.
All right.
Especially with the sun out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of throwing us all off.
Well, exactly. I know. The sun goes like, oh, my gosh, the sun's out. I can't think anymore.
It's
I can't talk.
Instant vitamin D injection that makes you automatically chirpy.
Pretty
as
much.
As long as you get out in it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's make this quick. All right.
So we have a Human Rights Week, and we've been having events for the last 2 years, and this is our third year. And we have we call it the Rising this, and we have an event Tuesday night, tomorrow night at the Jack, and Friday evening at the Jack. So Nate, do you want to explain
the Juno Arts and Culture Center, just right across the street here.
Right. And so the first one is going to be on suicide prevention. We have Christopher Carnes from the Juneau Suicide Prevention Council coming to talk. And, you know, when you live in Alaska, suicide just affects everybody. And it's not just depression. There's normally like a lot of issues that hit you all at once. And so it's important mm-hmm. for both parents and even family members to be able to understand and see, you know, the symptoms as well as the cries mm-hmm. for help, you know, with that. And a lot of people just typically ignore it and say, oh, they're depressed or whatnot. And really, you know, especially in the atmosphere we live and work in, it's important that people get help, you know, whether even if it's something as simple as a hug or talking to someone or even getting medical treatment. It's just really important for the community to be aware of the key elements of someone who isn't really feeling where they should be.
Okay.
And so that's going to be the focus of the conversation is, you know, looking at the key.
And this is taking place?
It's going to be on Tuesday at 6 o'clock at the Jack.
That's tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's tomorrow night, and it's free entry. And it's going to start right around 6, probably a little bit later.
And who do you have on the ticket who's going to be speaking?
Right now it's going to be Christopher Carnes from the local council.
Okay.
And so he'll
be doing suicide prevention group,
right? And he'll be doing a presentation, and then there'll be question and answer period afterward for that.
Great.
And so it's just really important that people, mm-hmm. you know, at least try to come and learn about suicide rather than just sweep it under the rug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our commission is committed to bringing issues to the community on various topics that. And this year we've chosen the human rights, or the suicide prevention, and then the 2-1-1 feature.
The 2-1-1 feature.
Yeah, through mm-hmm. through the United Way of Alaska, mm-hmm. they have a instead of 911, you dial 2-1-1, and it provides you with a whole array of services that you might be interested in looking at.
Okay.
So it's a computer kind of telephone-connected network.
I see. Yeah.
It is manned by a human, you know, uh-huh. during most business hours, and they're there to assist with, you know, whatever needs, you know, someone in the community might need, such as if you need some type of non-emergency medical help, you know, issues like with depression, maybe you need some assistance with, you know, rent, or you're getting kicked out. A lot of times the United Way can refer you to an agency that can help you. And so that's primarily the goal of the Alaska 2-1-1 system.
Is this a new system? It sounds really
I think it's fairly new.
Helpful.
We're
going
to find out more
yeah.
about it. I really yeah. didn't know about it until mm-hmm. we
yeah.
started talking
about
it.
So that's what this is all about,
yeah.
is right. bringing some awareness to this 2-1-1 system.
Yeah.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Wayne Stevens, the local president, would be talking, you know, mm-hmm. doing that presentation mm-hmm. on Friday at 6 or 6:30. And, you know, it's all about outreach, you know, letting the community know what's mm-hmm. available to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the key thing is so many people just, you know, take government for granted or they take programs for granted without realizing the full scope of what actually goes on in the background.
And how useful it can be. So we're trying to connect people with things that are available here in the community, services mm-hmm. that they may not know about or opportunities.
So now the Human Rights Commission, this is a volunteer board.
Right. We're appointed by the Borough Assembly to concern ourselves with issues of human rights. And it's an educational program that we try to provide each summer. Later on, for the last 2 years, we've had a dance fest of various community and cultural groups in the town, and we'll have another one on October 28th. And we'll hope to be in here and see you again, and or somebody here, and mm-hmm. describe. But that's going to go on again this year, too, mm-hmm. and that's been a nice activity.
What happens with dance fest?
Various groups come down. There's a Polynesian and a Filipino dancers that come in, and there's a Native group that kids that have come in and dance, and they're really fun to watch. And
so it's different cultural groups.
Different cultural groups
do performances at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, and
right, belly dancing. That's always fun to see. Mm-hmm.
Now, is this a fundraiser or just a fundraiser?
No. It's a fundraiser. The Borough Assembly grants us a small little grant, I guess, to be able to provide a venue for some of these things, and it's all free.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. Yeah. And now if someone is, how many people are on your board, the Human Rights Commission?
Seven.
And
it's all voluntary. Uh-huh.
So is this, I imagine, appointments open up every, or terms open up every so often, and then if someone wants to join the commission, they apply?
Yeah, you go through the city clerk's office. You know, right now we do have one open seat. And there's a lot of other boards that are open as well, not just the HRC. You know, and it's important for people to pick up that civic ball, you know, and talk to the clerk, you know, and get involved. You know, it's important. Otherwise, instead of sitting back and complaining about, you know, what's happening in Juneau or Washington, you know,
or not happening.
Or not happening, exactly. You know, it just opens everyone's
chance.
Eyes. Yeah. And like I said, I think, you know, before I came over, I saw a list of about 12 open seats.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is online, I imagine. You can Google City and Borough of Juneau.
Yeah, Juneau.org, and then click on the city clerk's office or the city assembly. And, you know, it's a fairly easy process. It's one-page application. Mm-hmm. You know, just explain why you want to get involved. You know, like with the HRC, you don't need to have any particular background. I mean, we're all human.
Yeah.
And I think that's the goal of it, you know.
So if you're human, you can apply to be on the Human Rights Commission.
Much, right. Living and breathing.
Right.
And so, and that's the important thing is, you know, we try to be proactive in our community rather than be reactive.
If you have a pull, supply.
Yeah. And, you know, anytime anything happens, you know, we try to, you know, try to give guidance, you know, to the assembly.
Yeah, yeah. Can you give us an example of something that you would give guidance on, or anything recently?
Well, we don't give direct guidance. We're not lawyers, and a lot of times it takes a legal... You know, the problems involve a legal framework. There's a state office of human rights that has attorneys who do that kind of work, but we don't actually involve ourselves in some of those issues that may require legal work. That's why we're particularly educational. 2 years ago, we had a featured speaker from the whole Not in Our Town series that's going across the country, and that was well attended, and there's a video that went along with it, and it was really interesting, and that mm-hmm. got us off into this whole educational framework and direction.
So just remind us one more time of the two events that are happening this week at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, Tuesday night and Friday night.
Correct. Go.
So we've got suicide prevention with Speaker Christopher Carnes on Tuesday at 6 o'clock at the Jack. There'll be free refreshments and munchies. And then again, on Friday, we have the 411 on 211, which is the United Way program, and that will be on Friday. Doors open at 6 at the Jack.
And of course, free
for
the
free.
Public.
It's all free.
Of course, it's all
welcome
free.
Welcome people to come down.
All right. Well, Steve Wolf and Nate Valier, anything you want to add?
No, I think that's
show
much.
Up.
Yeah, just yeah, come. We appreciate participation.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about these events and the Human Rights Commission.
Great.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Now it's time for Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Today, we're walking the shoreline of a saltwater bay. The tide's going out, revealing a broad expanse of dark, glistening mudflat. This muddy plain might appear a waste of natural space, a mere transient landscape awaiting the rising tide. And that low tide smell! On a hot day, it goes right by pungent, heading for malodorous. But that mudflat fragrance offers an important clue. Mudflats are rich in nutrients, such as decomposing organic matter and minerals. Mudflats, far from wastelands, support a bounty of life, such as foraging sandpipers called dunlins. Much of this life lies below the surface. Scoop up a pail of mud, and you might find, in addition to a clam or two big enough to eat, vast quantities of tiny snails and clams, worms, crustaceans, larvae, and much more. Mudflats also support a bounty of bird life. Millions of shorebirds follow shorelines and their mudflats each spring and fall, where they feast upon those tiny creatures hidden beneath the mud's surface. A banquet that powers the bird's continent-spanning migrations. So the next time you wrinkle your nose at low tide, imagine the countless creatures that draw their lifeblood from that fragrant mudflat. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Fish are running and bears are fattening up. Please remember that leaving fish and fish carcasses where they will attract bears can lead to danger for both people and bears. Stop fishing when bears are near and chop up and discard fish carcasses in fast-moving water. Don't teach bears that anglers provide an easy meal. At home, keep freezers and smokers in bear-resistant sheds or garages and never put fish carcasses in gardens or compost piles. Together, we can keep bears wild and anglers safe. This message is brought to you by Alaska's Bear Committee.
had to fit that in there in honor of Juno Limousine Services coming in talking to us. Owner Jeff Wright, yep, the Eagles were in town at least for 24 hours this summer. Who knew they got a limo ride? This is Katie Bosler. Thanks for listening to a Juno Afternoon today. You can see me on the radio real soon, about an hour on KRNN 102.7. I will have singer-songwriter Irene Muller in the studio, and she'll do a little preview of the KRNN Showcase, which is happening next Wednesday night. Not this Wednesday night, next Wednesday night. This is K2, and we broadcast at 104.3 in the Valley and Auk Bay. You can hear us at K276 AF 103.1, K269 AO at 101.1, and in Gustavus at K201 AM 88.1. And now, all things considered.
360 North, Saturday the 22nd at 9.
Doing everything I can to make sure American workers get a fair shot in the global economy.
President Obama announces a new trade complaint against China. It's Monday, September 17th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, the U.S. says China is subsidizing auto parts makers to boost its exports. We'll hear about the election year politics behind the trade tiff and how parties are wielding the issue on the campaign trail.
We're going to make sure that China understands we mean business. Trade is going to work for us, not just for them. And